Hi, I'm Mike Holby, President and CEO of the RAB, and welcome to Radio on Main Street, the podcast all about radio. We recently attended the NAB show in Las Vegas. Over a five-day period, this convention brought together 61,000 attendees, many close friends of the RAB. There were a number of keynote addresses, informative sessions, lots of relevant information for broadcasters, media, and entertainment. The buzz on the floor, in the escalator, in the hallways was high. Of course, sales, recruiting, technology, and AI among the topics. RAB's immediate past CEO, Erica Farber, and I had the opportunity to sit down with thought leaders from the industry. We talked about what their vision was for the future. Hey, a big thanks to Inco and Benstown for allowing us to record our live interviews from their exhibit booth. We did it every day of the convention and including a few live stream interviews. In the second episode of our podcast series, we will hear a conversation that Erica Farber had with Donnie Simpson, the legendary media trailblazer and award-winning program director who was inducted into the NAB Broadcasting Hall of Fame. Donnie's acceptance speech in Vegas was moving. We appreciate the fact that Donnie stopped by for a visit with us at Radio on Main Street.
All right, so here we are on the first day of the NAB, and I have the pleasure of sitting here with the legendary Donnie Simpson.
Wow,
so thank Donnie, thank you for coming to Radio on Main Street.
Oh, it's my honor. Thank you. You know, when you ask, I will be there. You
well,
know that.
I have to say something, and this is actually pretty funny. Now I'm really going to embarrass you. Donnie, to me, is the Elizabeth Taylor of the radio industry.
My many marriages.
No.
I've only had one. 50 years, by the way, so
so
that's a joke.
Well, we should do a podcast on that,
because
you're doing something right. Anyway, I mean that. You have the most amazing eyes.
Oh, thank you, Erica. Thank you.
And you're being honored. You're going into the NAB Radio Hall of Fame.
Wow.
What does that feel like?
Oh, my goodness. It's mind-blowing. You know, I mean, I never, ever thought about it. Never crossed my mind until I got that call. And then to know that people see you in that way,
right. That
they think that what you did had substance, it's mind-blowing.
Well, let's go to the beginning. I'm sure it's a story you've told many, many times.
When I was 12, my mother opened a record shop, Simpson's Record Shop, a little mom-pop joint. And I worked in that record shop with her. I could run it myself all day from the time I was 12. But I loved music and loved being in there, loved knowing what came out, all the music, the day it came out, I was aware of it, you know? But one day, we had a local...
Can you remember the first record you actually owned?
Yes. First record I bought myself.
Right.
Cost me 69 cents, and it was Stevie Wonder, Uptight.
Oh, my God.
Yep, that was the first record I bought. And it probably would be the last because my mom opened a record shop and then I got in radio. My music was free. So anyway, people used to always come in her shop and go, God, you sound just like a DJ. You ought to be a DJ. And I had a heavy voice. My voice changed.
So as a young man, you had
I did. My voice changed the summer between 7th and 8th grade. But so anyway, they would say, you know, you sound just like a DJ. You ought to be a DJ. It was in one ear, out the other. I wanted to be a Baptist minister. That was my ambition. But one day, when I was 15, my mother had a local DJ come out and do a show live from her record shop. His name was Al Perkins. And he let me come on the air with him and do the specials.
So he was doing a remote broadcast.
Yep, a remote broadcast.
Wow.
It was just one of these big glass booths. It drove up, you know, parked in front of the building. And, you know, they didn't have to bring any equipment in. They just sat out front and did it. But he let me come in, and I did the specials, you know. I said, hey, you know, we got Temptations' Greatest Hits on sale for the next 2 hours for $2.99, whatever. But the biggest thing was that while I was in that studio with him, just sitting there with his headphones on, and he's patting his feet to the music, and he's grooving, and I'm like, man, I could do that. I could do that.
What a cool job.
Oh, I know. That's, and I'm telling you, Erica, that was the very day I fell in love with radio. It was that moment right there. And then people came in the record shop and said, man, I heard you on the radio. You sound just like a DJ. And there was this girl from the local high school that my mother, that was in the district that my mother's shop was in, Pershing High, who had been coming in there trying to get me to join this group called the WJLB Soul Team Reporters.
Yep.
They had one reporter from each public high school, and they didn't have one for mine. I had no interest. For months, she tried to get me to come. The next time she came in after this incident, I was like, hey, I'm ready. And so we went down, and they accepted me that day and recorded my first report. And these reports were like 60 seconds, maybe 90. And they ran once to twice a day. And, you know, it was, you know, seniors don't forget cap and gown measurements for next Friday. We got bake sale Tuesday. You know, we beat Pershing High last week, 54-48. And lovers of the week are, and the song of the week is. You know, that kind of thing. When they recorded mine, the DJ that recorded mine, I read one line, and he just stopped the tape. And he looked over his glasses, and he said, you have got to be in radio, like that. And it was just this confirmation at such a young age. And but I got so popular from, because I was this kid with a heavy voice, from the 60 seconds a day, I got so popular that they started putting me on weekends for 3 hours. And but then I got so popular they fired a guy who works 8 to midnight, and they wouldn't to house me, but they fired him and asked me to sit in for him for a week to give them time to find somebody else.
Right.
That was when I was 15. I sat there for 7.5 years.
Oh, my gosh. So you'd go to school.
Yeah.
And then you were on the air till midnight?
Yep. Well, and I couldn't even do the show live because I was too young. So after school, I would have to go to the radio station, record my last hour and a half because I couldn't work past 10:30. Then I'd go home, do my homework, have dinner, then go back to the station.
So you were voice tracking before it became a thing.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You know, and you know, I have to point out what the blessing that this was. This was Detroit at the time, the fifth largest market in the country.
Yep.
You know, to get your start there in a major market was just, you know, it was just,
and
God was looking out for.
Incredible music
it.
Coming out of Detroit at that time.
With Motown, because this was 1969, you know, so, you know, Motown was the backdrop.
Yep.
For our musical soundtrack. It just, it could, you know, I would do, I'm doing my show and I would, you know, I've always done this all my career. I might play 4 or 5 Smokey songs in a row. But in Detroit, I'd do that. And Smokey calls on the request line. Stevie Wonder, same thing, called me on the request line. You know, Temptations would come and hang out in the studio with me at night while I'm doing this. And I'm not interviewing them.
Right.
They're just hanging out. You know, it was just, that was Detroit at the time. It was just magical, Erica. It was unbelievable.
So the journey continues. You leave Detroit.
Yeah. In 1977, I left Detroit. I got a call from a consultant for NBC out of New York. His name was Bob Henneberry.
Oh, sure.
And Bob called me on the air one night on the request line, and he says, hello, Donnie. This is Bob Henneberry from NBC in New York. I'd like to talk to you about coming to our station in Washington, D.C. And I said, come on, who the hell is this really? You know, because your boys in radio would call and put on that official voice, and then they go, oh, man, I'll see you after the show tonight. We're going to hang out? Yeah, yeah. So I thought it was a joke.
Oh, jeez.
And but it was a disco station. It was Disco 93 KYS. And my first thought was, there's no way I'm going to do that. I didn't want to do disco. But my oldest brother had always taught me that you always explore your options.
Yeah,
you don't
keep
shut
the door
them down.
Open.
Keep the door open. So go see. So I came to D.C. and met with him. Strangest thing, Erica. They picked me up at the airport and take me to Arlington Cemetery for the interview. I was like, this is so Washington. It's so clandestine. What is this? This
wow.
Is like CIA? What are we doing here? I'm a DJ. Why is it was just the weirdest place to have an interview. And but when I listened to the station, I found out they were much more than disco. And so, you know, I joined them. And, you know, it was the first couple of years were really rocky. The station really, we weren't doing well. The station, as a matter of fact, I found out much later they were going to change formats. Well, Walter Sabo, they'd asked for my resignation. I was the music director, and they asked for my resignation, and so I gave it to them, and then I didn't go to work for like 3 days. I was just, you know, and I, as a matter of fact, and during that 3 days, I found another gig. I was going to L.A., and but then the general manager called, and I'd ignored the calls of the program director. And but the general manager called and said, "Will you have dinner with me?" I said, "Yeah." So we went out to dinner that night, and he says, "Well, what's going on? What do you, what is the problem?" I said, "Biggest, to make it short, station sucks. You know, it's, you know," I said, "we have no community involvement. The music is wrong." I said, I got into this big argument with the program director about the Commodore's brick house. He's arguing with me that this is a ballad.
Oh, my God.
I mean, it's the biggest dance song of the year, and you're calling it a ballad? I said, it's crazy. You know, and so, anyway, we have this long conversation at dinner that night, and then he says, "Well, would you do me a favor? Would you put everything we talked about tonight, would you put that down in outline form? You know, and it could be handwritten." I said, "Sure." He said, "And can you, would you meet with me tomorrow?" I said, "Yeah, sure." So I go and meet with him the next morning at 10, bring the outline, put together a cassette tape of music and why I had songs to create flow the way I like to paint. And he looked at it and he says, "Okay, would you implement this for us?" And I, once again, Eric, I had no idea whatsoever that this was his thought, was to make me a program director. I had no interest in it. I was talent. That's what I wanted to be. And but, you know, I thought about it for all of 2 minutes and felt like, you know, one thing I know is that we can do better than we're doing. We're in 16th place.
Right.
So he fired the program director that day, made me PD, and in the next 9 months, we went from 16th to number one in 9 months. And it was NBC's first ever, anywhere in the country, number one radio station. So it was awesome. And you know what I loved about it? I would come to these conventions like this, and I'd sit and watch, you know, the seminar, Making Money with Your Mouth and all this stuff, and all these whiz. And I don't mean, I hope this doesn't sound too negative, but I would sit there and look at all these whiz kid programmers with the formulas and 2 shares, and I didn't know a damn thing and had a 10 share.
Yeah, but it just proves you... You were listening.
Yeah.
You knew what the audience wanted. Right. And that's what you focused on. And I mean, I think that's such a good lesson, because the formulas, there's some great formulas.
Yeah.
But they're no good unless we're really connecting with our listeners.
That is so important to me. That's everything, that connection. You know, I believe that. Like, when I was at KISS, we were in the basement, so we had no windows or anything. Once an hour, when I was doing the morning show, I would get up and go walk around the building because I needed to feel the day.
Yep.
There's certain songs that I'll play on rainy days that I won't play. You know, it's, I just needed to, it's that, it's a very spiritual thing that connects us all, I believe. And, you know, I've always been one to be in tune with that. That's the way I've always been.
So the business has certainly changed.
Yeah.
From when you started at 15 in Detroit.
Oh, absolutely.
What do you think about radio today?
Well, you know, I'll be totally honest with you. I'm not happy with where radio is, especially in terms of talent. Mm-hmm. I feel like there are too many shackles on talent. You know, I think, you know, once all the conglomerates came in and took up everything, and you know, they relaxed because you still be able to own one AM, one FM, and one TV, and you know, then it was just wild, wild west. And so you got one programmer programming 100 stations,
right,
instead of one. You know, maybe it's just that I'm old school, but I like that. I used to love Wheels Down in Vegas or New Orleans, wherever I was going, couldn't wait to pull out my transistor radio to feel what New Orleans felt like, because it was different from Los Angeles. It was different from Austin. It was from wherever you went. Now, it's so homogenized to me.
But local really matters.
Absolutely. 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 And so we've lost so much of that, and that bothers me. You know, I just, you know, I think about, let me tell you just this quick story, and I'll tell you. When I was in Detroit, the guy closest to me in age on radio, I thought he was old. He was probably, he couldn't have been but 22, 23.
An old guy.
Yeah, but Claude, the big soul rocker, he was my boy, and he turned me on to Elton John. So we're listening to Goodbye Yellow Brick Road album, and I get caught up on this cut, Benny and the Jets, right? So every night for a week, I'm like, man, I'm going to play this. But I was scared to, because you know, black audience didn't know Elton.
Right.
And finally, a weekend, I said, man, I'm playing it. You know, because we had freedom, which is what I hate most about radio today, that jocks don't have this freedom. And this is why I'm telling the story. Because I played that song twice that night. The reason I played it the second time was because the phones were jumping off the hook from the first time. I've never seen anything like it.
Instant.
It was an explosion.
Wow.
And the morning jock, who was Al Perkins, the guy who came to my mother's record shop, called me the next morning, wakes me up at 7:30. What is this song you played last night? Jenny and the Nets or something? He said, you got to bring it down here. They're killing me. They're calling me. I get in my car, take him the song down. In 2 days, Elton was on the phone, called the radio station.
Wow.
What is this? I hear Benny and the Jets is breaking black in Detroit. 6 months later, he comes to Detroit, holds a press conference to present me with a gold record for this.
Oh, how
for breaking Benny and the Jets. It was his biggest selling single until he did the remake of Candle in the Wind for Lady Di.
Right.
When she died. And, I mean, to have something like that happen for me at that age, for Elton John to come and hold this press conference for me. I hung out with Elton for 2 days. And I'm telling that story because there's so many other young people today that could have such moments because they have great ears.
Right.
And they never get to express themselves musically. And I hate that.
But I'm hearing you say two things. First of all, what you said is when you talk about young people,
mm-hmm.
the importance of us bringing them into our business.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And at the same time, also letting them
right.
put their own spin on, you know, what it is they're thinking and how to connect with those audiences.
Let my people go. You know, you got to let talent be talent. You know, to me, and I you know, maybe I'm naive, but I think it works in all businesses. That, well, I know for this, I should only speak on this because it's what I do. But when you're speaking with about talent and
right.
Creative people, you'll get a lot better product if you let them represent themselves. You know, instead of trying to represent you, you know.
Yeah.
When I was program director, Erica, I never, ever, ever once hotlined one of my DJs. Never. You know, if I'm listening, I hear something that was wrong. Man, I know that you know it was wrong, too. Why would I call you and sacrifice the last 2 hours of your
right,
show for something you did?
In the show.
It's stupid to me. You know, plus, what happens is that now you end up talking to me. You're scared of that line, that phone going off. I don't want you talking. I have nothing to do with this. This is between you and your audience. You know, it's one-on-one with you.
So, Donnie, at the RAB, obviously, we work with stations and sales staffs to help monetize their products.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really important that we continue to grow the revenue so that we can all do what we do. So, as a creative person, a content creator, a talent, what advice do you have for those on the marketing and sales side to how to better support you as a talent and how we can work together to monetize the product and all win together?
Yeah, you know, I guess it's listening, you know, and believing in that talent. You know, I think if you hire good people and you believe in them, you let them go, we all learn from each other. I mean, the talent can learn from you as well, you know. But I know it's a harder dollar now in radio than it was before. You know, I get that. I mean, that's the very reason I'm not doing it anymore right now. It's like, you know, it's just, it changed. The internet came and changed all of that. That whole advertising-based model is just, it's different. It's hard. It's hard. Because we all went through pay cuts, and I'm sorry, I'm drifting, but pay cuts and all that stuff that we went through as talents, and I remember having this conversation with a very dear friend of mine. It was Jim Vance. He was in Washington. He was the king of Washington television. He just passed a few years ago. But we were talking about it. He was very afraid he was going to take a huge pay cut. And I said, well, you are, Jim. I said, you know, mine was 67%. But Jim, we're lucky. We're in radio and television. We're just taking pay cuts. Print, they're shutting their doors.
That's such a great point.
Yeah. You know, so, you know, I probably haven't answered your question at all, but, you know.
So we have a campaign at the RAB where we talk about that radio matters because, and how would you finish that sentence?
Radio matters because people need to know what's going on in their backyard, in their homes. You know, I'm a big proponent of local radio. I think it's just so important. And, you know, people need to know what's going on. Radio has always been that source for them. You know, I hope that it continues. I'm concerned about it. You know, I hear major auto manufacturers that aren't even putting radios in their cars anymore. That's scary to me.
Right.
That's scary. But, you know, I just feel like that is still the place where you get your local news, and not just news, but, you know, whatever it is, things where you find out what's happening in your community, things that you can use or things that you can participate in, charities that need your help, whatever it is that's going on in your community, you need to be a part of that. It's not just the big picture of a world news. I don't want to see it become all of that. It should be, you still have to have that local element, and I think that that's what radio gives you still.
So as, unfortunately, I knew this was going to happen, as the clock is ticking here, let's end on a positive note.
Yeah.
And what would you most like to say to everyone that is in radio, interested in being in radio, to make them feel good about what we do for a living and how lucky we are?
Well, you know, I've loved radio all my life. This is my 55th year in radio. And I hope that nothing I've said is discouraging. It's not, it's just observational. It's not,
sure.
I love this industry and pray for it, hope that it will continue and will grow. We'll find ways to grow it. But that if you're, especially on the talent end, if this is what you want to do, then the best advice that I can give you is to be you. Sounds like a very simple thing to do, but it took me 12 years to learn how to be me.
Right.
Because you come in emulating styles that you like, people that you think do good radio, you know, you take pieces of those styles. But I remember very vividly the morning when I said, wow, I'm me. I'm not trying to be Jay Roberts at WJR anymore, or Cat Daddy-O on your raggedy radio, or, you know, Ted Richards, CKLW. You know, wow, I'm done. And man, when you find that stride, oh man, it's like, I'm in the process, have been for a while, of writing a book, my memoir. And
do you have a title yet?
Well, that's what I was going to get to.
Okay.
The guy that I was writing with said, you know what, the story I like most, I think you should call it Being Me. Mm. And he said, the reason is because, he said, I love what you said. And what I told him was that, I've always felt that there were 1,000 people out there waiting to take my job, that 500 of them are just as good as I am.
Wow.
The other 500 are better.
Well,
the only thing they can't beat me doing is me. That's the only thing I can beat them all at. You can't beat me being me.
Yes.
And that's all I need to be. You know, every day, Erica, before the show, I would pray.
What good advice for anyone in any business. Yeah.
Every day I would pray for the Lord to make me great. Not perfect, because I could never be that, but just great. Like, I never listened to myself on radio or watch myself on TV. I was always afraid that I would start trying to make myself perfect. I don't need to be perfect. I do need to be me.
In Donnie's chat with Erica, he reflected on his 55-year career in broadcast radio. He shares a few real gems of advice and observations for any program director or content creator who is starting in the business. One, the importance of listening to your audience, hiring good talent, and letting them be themselves. And above all, the most important thing is you being you, as authenticity is critical. These are great insights, not just for on-air personalities, but for anyone in the radio or entertainment business. Plus, how cool was it to learn that Donnie helped Elton John make Benny and the Jets a bona fide smash hit?
If you'd like to learn more about radio and its many benefits, we invite you to visit us at rab.com, or you can email us directly at askrab@rab.com. Until next time, it's Radio on Main Street.